Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Time Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 98 event, which takes place in Mexico City, Mexico. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we went 3-1 on our premium bets for UFC 204 to profit 5.8 units, and we also won our one-unit free bet on Mike Perry. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 98 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a featherweight contest between Enrique Barzola, who is 11-3-1, and Chris Avila, who is 5-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Barzola minus 380, the comeback on Avila at plus 260. Right now, looking over a sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. It is currently Barzola coming in at minus 600. And the comeback is plus 450 on Avila. So action did get bet up coming in on Barzola. A lot of people are putting him in parlays, I'm sure. And I can understand why. I opened him a significant favorite, and you wouldn't think of Barzola being under that category of being a decent favorite, especially a couple fights into his real UFC career and coming off of a controversial close decision win. But man, I mean, stylistically, this is really a great fight for Barzola. And you could tell why. I mean, Avila in his debut against Lobov, I mean, he looked pretty bad, honestly. I mean, it was that whole rivalry with McGregor and the Diaz camp and their guys kind of coming in there and they matched it up so they can have a little bit more kind of to go along with that rivalry or whatnot. And Avila, there was some hype coming into that fight with him. The guy definitely has a little bit of skill. He just doesn't know how to use it properly. And I think in the UFC, in his debut, he didn't show that. And I think he's going to have a difficult time actually doing that and being a little bit more aggressive because he has length. That's one good thing that he does have about him for the featherweight weight class. He's got some skill on the feet, a little bit of skill on the feet. He needs to be a lot more aggressive and utilize that reach a little bit, which he doesn't do very good. And then at the same time on the ground, he does have some submissions to go along with it. But here against Barzola, I think Barzola is the better striker. Barzola is the better wrestler. I don't think Avila is able to catch him on the ground, and I don't think he's able to knock him out. So Barzola is going to be able to push the pace. He's going to be able to outstrike him on the feet because he's going to be the aggressor. And if he wants a takedown or two along the way, he can get it, and I don't think he gets subbed. So Barzola coming off of, obviously, the Ultimate Fighter victory. I mean, he was a winner of his season, so that's impressive. And then making his UFC debut and suffering, like I said, in his last fight against Bochniak, a lot of people thought that he should have got the nod possibly. It was a close competitive fight. I think there's more upside to Barzola, and I'm expecting some good things. And he's going to be a tough out at featherweight for sure. He's only going to get better and better now that he's been training a little bit with American Top Team as well. So a lot of things to like about Barzola, and he should really cruise to victory here. I don't see him really getting upset here. So my pick is going to be Barzola to beat Avila.
Yeah, realistically, Avila got brought in to take on a Team Conor McGregor member in Artem in Lobov, and he got outclassed, which is kind of embarrassing because Lobov isn't exactly a very good fighter. He just has some experience. The main thing is Avila just too much too soon for him. He doesn't belong in the UFC. Enrique Barzola is a really talented fighter. He won a season of The Ultimate Fighter. I think overall, he's just a solid grappler with some improving stand-up. You saw that in his last fight where, honestly, he kind of got robbed. And I think he is improving every time we see him. He's going to get even better in this fight. And if Avila had trouble with Lobov, I think Barzola is better than Lobov. So I think Avila, unless he magically clips him or catches him in something, then Barzola is just going to steamroll Avila here. There's just no real physical or technical advantage for Avila in this fight. So I expect Enrique Barzola to win a convincing decision or potentially pull off a stoppage. Now, moving up to the lightweight division, we have Marco Polo Reyes, who is 7-3, taking on Jason Novelli, who is 11-2 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Reyes, minus 130, the comeback on Novelli at minus 110. Public action coming in on Reyes early on. Right now, it's actually Reyes minus 165, Novelli is plus 145. So the support definitely coming in on Reyes. Novelli not getting much love. I mean, his debut in the UFC, he suffered obviously a knockout loss to Tamer in that fight, which it was a pretty good fight. Tamer is definitely a very talented striker. I mean, one of the, I think, most technical and accurate strikers in the lightweight division right now. So it's not necessarily a bad loss for Novelli, but still, I think the public is not going to respect him coming into the UFC and kind of getting beat like that. Now, Reyes, on the other hand, obviously he was another tough Latin America veteran. He did okay on the show, but he did, I guess, gain a little bit more credibility afterwards when he ended up making it to the UFC and made his official debut and knocked out Arzamendia. He looked really good in that fight, but Arzamendia, to be honest with you, his chin is garbage. So, of course, Reyes should knock a guy out like that. At least we could say that easier now after the fact, of course. But Reyes has that type of explosive knockout power that, man, that he's the most dangerous at for sure, is on his feet. I mean, he's a powerhouse. He's striking is getting a little bit more technical. He's not just a brawler anymore. I mean, you could definitely see that his striking is getting a little bit cleaner, especially from the show. And his win against Kim last time showed that as well. So he suffered through some tough times in his last fight against Kim as well. I mean, he got clipped. He had to weather the storm. He had to show toughness. He was tired, all that stuff, and managed to get the win. So I think his stock has climbed up, obviously, in the public's eyes overall. And they believe that Reyes is one of these guys that's going to be hard to take down. And on the feet, he's just so good at what he does with that kind of power that if you get in a brawl with this guy, you're not going to last, especially Novelli coming off the knockout loss that he did. So all of this adds up to, I understand why everybody's on Reyes, but you know what? If you look at it from a fighter's perspective, I mean, Novelli is definitely by far the better overall fighter. I mean, he is going to have some problems with Reyes on the feet for sure. He's got to be careful. Novelli at times gets a little bit too tentative and he doesn't attack enough, but he does have a 4-inch reach advantage here. He's got a Muay Thai background. He's actually not that bad of a striker. He's also got a boxing background to go along with it. So his hands are good. His Muay Thai game is okay as well. He just needs to be a little bit more aggressive, and defensively, of course, he needs to tighten up a little bit as well. But his clinch game is good. He has good, effective knees. I mean, he even stunned Tamer in his last fight with a knee. Didn't end up winning the fight for him, but at the same time, he did rock him there for a little bit. So Novelli is no slouch on the feet, but even more so on the ground. I mean, that's where he's going to have a significant edge over Reyes, is the ground game. I mean, his wrestling's okay. It's not like he could dominate a guy, take him down, and just, you know, dominate the ground game. So he's going to have problems probably getting Reyes to the ground. But if this fight hits the floor, Novelli is by far the better ground fighter. And I think he can win this fight by submission as well. So in my opinion, Novelli is the better overall mixed martial artist. I'm going to side with him. I think basically if he weathers a storm and doesn't get caught early on by Reyes, I think if he hits the scorecards, even though Reyes is going to be the aggressor in this spot, I think Novelli's going to put himself in better positions along the way. Reyes defensively, there are some concerns with him as well. And then if that's not the case, if it does go to the ground, I think Novelli does win by submission here as well. So Novelli, I think, has a little bit more ways to win. I think he is the more complete mixed martial artist. This is going to be an unpopular pick for sure, but I have to go with Novelli. I think he is the better fighter here. So let's see what happens.
There are a couple factors here that are making me a little tentative on Novelli. Now, obviously, he is a talented fighter. I definitely feel he's better than he showed in his UFC debut against Tamer. In that fight, he just let Tamer dictate everything. Even though he was the one pushing the pace, he was the one moving forward. Tamer was the one that was landing. He outlanded him like 4-1. So Novelli definitely is going to have to up his output if he wants to have some success here against Reyes. The other thing is, Novelli's biggest strength is his ground game. He has a very solid Brazilian jiu-jitsu game and submission skills, and he didn't even try to take that last fight to the ground against a very seasoned kickboxer. Now, against Marco Polo Reyes, Novelli cannot screw around. Yes, he could have a little bit more success on the feet than in his last fight, but if you go through Reyes's fight history, he's been submitted twice. He had a nice little 3-fight losing streak where he got submitted in 2 of them. And if Novelli can get a top position on him, then he'd be in good shape. I definitely feel that he could pull off a stoppage victory. Will he actually do it? I don't know. Sometimes guys just freeze up inside the cage. Even if they say they'll do one thing, they'll do another. Now, Reyes, on the other hand, he has been kind of a wrecking ball. I mean, he is a brawler to the max. Very, very exciting fighter. He not afraid to stand in the pocket and trade, as you saw in his last fight, the fight of the night against Donghyung Maestro Kim. And he just goes in there and tries to take his opponent's head off. And he does have some technical skill too. I mean, he's not just a pure brawler. I mean, he has a good jab. He has good combinations. He mixes up, his Muay Thai on the inside is actually really good with some nasty knees as well, just like Novelli's. So, Reyes should have the edge on the feet and with output, a major edge. So, I can see Reyes winning a decision here. I can see Reyes winning by knockout, and I can see Novelli winning by submission. So there are definitely multiple avenues for both guys to win this fight, but I just have to side with the guy that I feel has a little bit more momentum. And I think being in Mexico City is going to slow down Novelli a little bit more even, potentially. So I like Marco Polo Reyes here to either win a decision or knockout. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Sam Alvey, who is 28-8 with 1 no contest, taking on Alex Nicholson, who is 7-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how's the public shifted things so far?
Up in Alvey minus 315, the comeback on Nicholson at plus 235. Respect coming in towards Nicholson. He's all the way down. Alvey is all the way down to minus 200. The comeback on Nicholson is at plus 170. So dog action coming in. Obviously, I opened the line a little bit too high in this matchup. I wasn't quite sure that Nicholson would receive, obviously, the amount of respect that he has. But he has. And he's the type of fighter that, man, I mean, he brings a lot to the table as far as unorthodox skill set. And his length and size for middleweight is pretty big. I mean, he's 6'4". He's got a huge reach. I mean, I believe it's like 81-inch reach overall, which should be about 5-6 inches of reach over Sam Alvey in this fight here. So he typically is going to have the reach over most opponents. And then on the feet, he's unorthodox. He has a little bit of power, obviously, as well. So he's kind of hard to deal with. It's weird because sometimes guys that are non-flashy fighters or don't have the most technical skill set makes the fight a little bit tougher and a little bit strange when you're going up against a person like that. And it kind of throws your game off a little bit. And even he can make a good fighter look bad at times just because he's so unorthodox is what I'm trying to say. So Alvey could have a little bit of problems here. And I understand why people are gobbled up that dog money in some ways. But overall, I think Alvey is definitely the better fighter. I mean, he's more technical on the feet. Alvey is a little bit too patient at times, and he needs to be a little bit more aggressive. But he has the accuracy. He's got the knockout power to give Nicholson a lot of problems. He also should have the wrestling advantage here. If Alvey chooses to get this fight to the ground, he should be successful in that route as well. And then, of course, Alvey also has a sneaky good submission game. He doesn't utilize it a lot, but he has it in his arsenal as well. So Alvey is the better fighter, the more complete fighter. It just really comes down to how he's going to want to fight this fight. I mean, he usually is the type of guy that's very intelligent, game plans well, knows his opponents well, studies them. So I think Alvey's going to be prepared for this fight, and I think he's going to be able to get the job done here, but he has to be careful. I mean, we recently saw Alvey suffer a loss. I know it was to Brunson, but Nicholson has that, again, unorthodox way of fighting on the feet, and he does have a little bit of power, so Alvey can't underestimate him completely. But it is his fight to win or lose. So despite all the action coming out of Nicholson and snatching that dog money, I still believe that Alvey is the better fighter here, and I think that it'd be a shame. I mean, if he starts, stringing together some wins here and loses to a guy like Nicholson that really isn't on Alvey's level, that would be really a shame. So I think Alvey does get away with the win here. It might be interesting at times, but I think he is the better fighter, and he should show. So my pick is Sam Alvey.
Overall, I really haven't been that impressed with Alex Nicholson. Obviously, UFC debut on short notice, up a weight class, he got completely smoked by Misha Sirkunov, which most fighters would. But even in his last fight against Devin Clark, I mean, he was kind of getting handled in that fight and then landed a shot out of nowhere right at the end of the round and got a TKO victory. So, I'll give him some credit. He hung in there. He hung tough. But overall, I just not that impressed with Alex Nicholson's skill set. I don't think his chin is that good. He does have power, but if you look at him, the comparison between him and Sam Alvey, the only thing Nicholson really has on him is reach. Everything else, Alvey, even though Alvey has a tendency to be inactive, Alvey still is landing about a strike per minute more. Alvey's 10% more accurate. Alvey absorbs less strikes, and Alvey's striking defense is about 12% higher. I mean, everything is favoring Alvey, and Alvey's takedown defense is twice as good. So even though Alvey doesn't really go for takedowns, like Nick said, the avenue is there if he really wants to go for it. Now, on the feet, I think Nicholson, if he can work a jab, if he could actually use that reach, then he could make something happen here. But overall, I think Sam Alvey's chin is pretty granite. I mean, the only guy that's ever been able to really test it has been Derek Brunson, and he's been doing that to everybody he's faced over the last 2 years, where he just goes in there and just steamrolls people. And I don't think Alex Nicholson's that type of fighter. So unless Sam Alvey gets way too aggressive and leaves his chin, you know, way overexposed, then I see Sam Alvey just pressuring Nicholson and eventually finding that opening and getting a TKO victory. Alvey has been super active lately. I mean, he fought in June of this year, July of this year, August of this year, and he was scheduled to fight in October before this fight, that last event got canceled and then moved to this event. So the guy just really wants to stay active, and major credit to him. And I think that he moves his winning streak to 3 here against Alex Nicholson. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a bantamweight contest between Henry Briones, who is 19-5-1, and Douglas Silva de Andrade, who is 23-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Andrade, de Andrade -210, the comeback on Briones at +160. Action did come in on the dog Briones. It's now down to de Andrade -160. The comeback on Briones is at +140. So Briones' performance, really, I think, against Cody Garbrandt, earned him a lot of respect and some recognition, definitely from the betters, because, you know, a lot of people were thinking it was going to be a blowout, and Briones actually performed relatively well in that fight. And Briones is the type of guy that obviously is another one of these tough Latin America competitors that's been around, though, even before that show, for a long time. I mean, he's been on the regional MMA scene, you know, obviously in Latin America, and he's been performing at a decent pace, at a decent rate as far as those guys go in a lower level competition. He's had some success, obviously, based on his record and resume. But what impresses me the most about him, I got to see some of his earlier performances in some of those fights, and he wasn't really that good. He had some stamina issues. He had a problem with takedowns and getting, you know, people getting top position on him as well. But you could see that there was always potential there. What happened to Briones is actually he elevated his game. And I don't know if it was the Ultimate Fighter, whatever the case may be. He's one of those savvy vets that finally everything started clicking for him. And I think he's taken his game to a whole nother level. So he's training properly. His cardio is definitely a little bit better as well. And he's always had a decent amount of skill. I mean, on the feet, he's not bad. He could definitely hang with most people on the ground. He's got a good ground game going with it. So he's a very well-rounded veteran mixed martial artist that's going to make life tough for most opponents. And right now, even though he's 36 years old, he's kind of finally finding that groove. That being said, I think de Andrade is going to be one of these guys that continues to get better fight by fight. I know he's not getting a lot of respect out there from the overall bettors because obviously they're coming down to Briones over here. And even his fight against Cody Gibson, a lot of people can say what they will, but he did get the W in that fight. And against Gibson, Cody Gibson's not necessarily a bum type of fighter. He's not a can. I mean, so it's not a terrible win for him. And then, of course, he did suffer that loss before that to Hugoff. But de Andrade, I think, is the type of fighter that is going to improve fight by fight. I think on the feet, he's okay. I know he's a little bit wild at times. He's not the most technical fighter, but he does have some pop in his punches and kicks. So the guy has a little bit of power. The guy, I think, has some underrated wrestling to go along with it. And although he doesn't really attack for submissions that often, he still has that in his back pocket as well. So he is also a very well-rounded fighter. I'm expecting a pretty close competitive type of fight. I think it probably does hit the scorecards, and we see on D'Andrade kind of squeaking out with another competitive but deserving decision over Briones. So I know Briones is going to be game. I understand it's going to probably be a close one. That's why people are hitting the dog here, but I still got to go the other way and pick Andrade. I think he's just a little bit better, and I think he's going to continue to probably be the guy with a little bit more upside, where Briones, I don't think we're going to see him get any better from here on out. I think he's just going to basically plateau. And then, you know, Father Time's obviously going to catch up with him. He's 36 years old. I don't know how much left he's going to have in the tank, but all in all, both these guys deserve a little respect, but I'm going to lean towards Andrade.
And I don't know about using the age argument here. I mean, honestly, if you look at these guys, Andrade actually looks older physically, and Andrade, for some reason, when he fights, even though he does have a bit of power in his hands, and he definitely does know what he's doing on the feet, he always looks so stiff in his stand-up. And Briones definitely is a lot more laid back, a lot smoother. And you saw that in the Garbrandt fight, where he actually rocked Cody Garbrandt at one point. Now, Garbrandt did come back to win the decision, but overall, Briones has been the guy that's given Garbrandt his toughest test in the UFC, and that's a kid that is fighting for the title. So you got to give Briones some credit here. And I think Briones, you know, he trains out of a good gym. He works with a lot of the best guys that have come out of tough Latin America, and it's showing. So Douglas Silva Andrade, I think he's going to have his hands full here. Now, Andrade is no pushover. I mean, you don't win 23 of your first 25 career fights by accident. The guy has power. He has a little bit of submission ability, and he definitely can push a pretty high pace. So, Briones is going to have his hands full, but I do think that there's going to be some opportunity here for Briones to maybe take advantage. Andrade hasn't fought since his last bout against Cody Gibson, which was February of 2015. That's almost 2 years. So, Briones, you know, if Andrade is a little rusty, then maybe Briones could take advantage. Now, obviously Briones probably going to be a little rusty too. He hasn't fought since the Garbrandt loss, which was in July of 2015. So, both of these guys are definitely coming in after long layoffs. But one thing you do have to consider here, it's in Mexico. It's in Mexico City. Briones does a lot of his training in Mexico as well. Andrade coming in from Brazil. Very high elevation. I think this is a fight where the elevation could definitely be a factor. And while Andrade hasn't had a lot of conditioning issues in the past, I do think that the elevation could definitely play a big part. So I'm going to slightly lean Briones. I think his boxing is a little bit better than Andrade's. Maybe not his overall striking game. I think Andrade is a little bit better with the kicking and everything. But I think Briones is going to make this fight really competitive, and the conditioning and elevation could be the ultimate deciding factors. So I'm going to side with Henry Briones. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Eric Montano, who is 8-4, taking on Max Griffin, who is 12-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Griffin at minus 245, the comeback on Montana was at plus 175. Line was overshot a little bit. Right now it's Griffin minus 160. The comeback on Montana is plus 140. Montano brothers are getting some love, at least this one is here in this matchup here. And normally that's not the case. A lot of people, I believe, kind of like to fade these guys. I mean, it's one of those situations where I think the Montanos just don't get a lot of respect as a whole, but that's kind of changed recently. And you got to kind of respect it a little bit, because they definitely, both brothers have a little bit of skill, but obviously here we're talking about Eric Montano and his matchup with Griffin. So I'll get into that a little bit as well. But I think Montano's stock rose a little bit despite his loss in his last fight to Brown, because a lot of people were expecting Brown to just run through him. But Montano obviously showed a little bit of heart. He showed some good ground game. His ability on the ground is definitely okay as well. I mean, he's got underrated wrestling, and that's going to be the key here against Griffin as well, because on the feet, Griffin has a huge edge. I mean, Griffin is the type of fighter that's explosive. He's powerful. I mean, that's how he wins most of his fights. He knocks people out. So he's going to have the edge over Montano on the feet for sure. He can knock Montano out. I'm not, even though Montano hasn't officially been knocked out, Griffin can do that. He can be the first to do that. That's the kind of power he does really present in matchups like this. But Montano if he's able to get Griffin on the ground, he is going to have the advantage on the ground overall. I think his submission game offensively at least is definitely better. His top control is going to be a little bit better. I think it's going to be difficult though for Montano to do that early on in this fight against Griffin. But as it goes, I mean, obviously we're going to have to see. This is at high altitude. Of course, we all know what happens. It seems to happen in Mexico. A lot of the fighters do get the altitude does have an impact on them, and they do look a little bit worse when it comes to cardio and conditioning. So if that's the case with Griffin and Montano's cardio is just a little bit better, I mean, we could see this fight get interesting if it goes round two, round three, and Montano maybe win it on the ground. So I think that's why everybody's betting Montano here. I can understand it. I see why. I mean, he does have the ground advantage, and it looks like he's got a little bit of a cardio advantage over Griffin as well. But I still think people are counting Griffin out a little bit too much. I mean, he did come in and his UFC debut, his official UFC debut, and of course he lost to Covington, but you know what? Covington is a different type of beast. I mean, he's not on the same level as Montano, obviously. I mean, Covington is a better wrestler. His stand-up game's improving a little bit as well. It's just a different type of matchup for him. Although Montano is going to try to duplicate a lot of that same stuff, I don't think he's going to have as much success as Covington did over Griffin. So different matchup. I think Griffin's going to come in a little bit better shape in this spot here as well. So hopefully his conditioning is a little bit better. And if that's the case, if he can sprawl and brawl, he's going to light Montano up. So I do like Griffin in this spot. I think he does have some skill. He's being a little bit underrated here, especially against Eric Montano. And I think he's probably going to get the W. So I'm going to lean opposite of the betting action right now, and I'm going to pick Griffin to win this fight.
Both of these guys definitely have paths to victory. Griffin obviously is a ferocious striker with a lot of power, a lot of explosiveness. If he can get in Montano's grill and land some big shots, 100% he can knock him out. That being said, Montano definitely showed in the Randy Brown fight that he can pick up some takedowns. He can really drag the fight out a little bit. Now, he did leave his neck exposed, ended up getting guillotined in the early in the third round, but he did showcase that he's capable of taking opponents down and definitely frustrating them. And that's what happened in Max Griffin's UFC debut against Colby Covington. Griffin started out strong on the feet, but the second Covington got him on the floor and put him on his back, he really started getting frustrated. Now, Griffin isn't just a turtle off of his back. He did showcase some ability to get back to his feet. He had a nice little Kimura sweep that he used on Covington. So, and Montano is not as good of a wrestler or takedown artist as Covington, and Griffin is not as bad of takedown defense as Randy Brown. So Montano's definitely going to have to work for this if he wants to get the win, and that's partially why I'm not going to be picking him. I think it's just going to be a little bit too difficult for Montano to get things going here, and I expect overall that Max Griffin just gets inside, lands some big shots, and does enough to pick up a TKO victory at some point. Worst case scenario, maybe Griffin wins the first two rounds and holds on. So I'm leaning Max Griffin. I think that he gets his first UFC victory. Now dropping down to a 140-pound catchweight fight, we have Marco Beltran, who is 8-4, taking on Joe Soto, who is 16-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds makers' perspective on this one?
I opened Soto minus 125, the comeback on Beltran at minus 115. So basically a pick 'em with a slight lean towards Soto. And right now at five dimes, it's basically the same thing. Soto minus 125, Beltran is plus 105. So line margins did tighten up a little bit. Early action did hit Soto, but now we're seeing some action back in on Beltran. So there is two-way action on this fight. A lot of split support, really. And if you're looking at skill set for skill set, I mean, there's no question who the better fighter is, in my opinion here. It's obviously Soto. He is taking this fight on short notice, though. Beltran obviously is going to be in a little bit better shape. He's going to be ready, you know, to go three strong rounds. I'm not so sure if Soto will. So that comes into play here for sure. And Beltran actually has been looking better. I mean, you got to give the guy credit for sure. He's another one of these tough Latin America vets that I think lacked a little bit of respect. But, I mean, he's training hard, obviously, after coming off the show. And he's training with the likes of Yair Rodriguez, which obviously we know that guy is on a different level right now. I mean, he's getting better and better. So I think quality training partners like that is going to definitely rub off on Beltran, and you can see it. I mean, his performance, his confidence is getting better. He's faced decent competition thus far, you know, from the show, and he's been performing well. I mean, on the feet, Beltran definitely has a little bit of pop. He mixes things up well, a little bit unorthodox, but not necessarily sloppy. So he's got some skill on the feet. He's got a little bit of skill on the ground to go along with it. So he's not bad, and he is getting better. Now, Soto, on the other hand, he's just a better fighter, I think, because he does have a significant ground advantage over Beltran. I think on the ground, especially with his submission game, he's way ahead of Beltran. His wrestling is ahead of Beltran as well. His stand-up, it's going to be close because Beltran does have a decent little reach advantage here. It's about 4 or 5 inches of reach. And I think Beltran and Soto striking, Soto gets hit a little bit too much. So I'd actually give the advantage to Beltran on the feet right now. But again, the ground game is what comes into play here. And that's why Soto is actually the slight favorite, because Soto should be able to get a takedown or two. And on the ground, it could cause Beltran some problems. He could even get the submission for Soto. So and that's where the intriguing thing is going to come into play here. Who is able to implement their game plan the most? And I think if Beltran keeps it upright, he probably is going to do enough damage and maybe even knock Soto out. If not, Soto could take the fight to the ground again, control it, maybe even sub him as well. The question mark here for me is how well conditioned is Soto going to be? I mean, he's a savvy vet, been around the sport for a long time. So I'm expecting him to still be in somewhat decent shape here. I don't think he's going to be that bad coming into this fight. But again, with the altitude and everything coming into play and taking this fight on short notice, I've been kind of going back and forth on this fight. I would normally pick Soto, but I think with the short notice and how these guys kind of match up together, I'm going to have to lean a little bit more towards Beltran. So that tells you, I mean, I believe that Soto is definitely a very good bantamweight, a guy that's kind of like gatekeeper for the division. If you beat this guy, then good things are to come ahead. And I think that Beltran is probably going to get the job done. I can't believe I'm saying that. I guess I'm disrespecting Beltran still a little bit. I mean, he is getting better, but I just don't see him as a title contender one day. But this is definitely a big step for him. And if he gets a win over Soto, he's definitely on the right path. So hesitation here for me, but I definitely have to side a little bit more with Beltran just because of the matchup, because of the timing, because of the short notice. Everything that kind of comes into play here just leans me a little bit more towards Beltran, but not a confident pick because Soto is the better fighter.
And that's the thing. Soto is the more well-rounded fighter of the two. He definitely has a solid ground game that could definitely give him an advantage here. That being said, super short notice with Soto stepping in for Canetti. And then it's in Mexico City. I've mentioned this multiple times already, but the high elevation, I am not liking Joe Soto's chances barring a first round submission. If he doesn't get that, then I see Marco Beltran just taking over. As Nick mentioned, Beltran has improved leaps and bounds working with Yair Rodriguez. And I'll admit, I have underestimated this guy every time he stepped into the octagon. I just did not respect him after, you know, not an impressive pair of first UFC fights, but he went out there in his last fight and took care of business and looked really good. So it's clear that he is improving and he's just on a nice little upward momentum, and still just 30 years old, not, you know, the worst by any means. And Joe Soto just has not had a lot of success inside the octagon, obviously. It's been very frustrating for him. Now, he did have a nice win in his last fight against Chris Beal. I'll give him credit for that. But overall, I just think that Marco Beltran on short notice is just going to be a bit too much for Soto to overcome here. I expect Beltran to get the better of Soto on the feet. And as long as he can avoid most of Soto's takedowns, then he should be in good shape. I mean, Soto only has 13% takedown accuracy in the UFC so far. And I think that is going to be a big, big component of this fight. If Soto can't get the fight to the floor, then I expect Beltran to get the better of him on the feet and eventually win a decision, maybe even put him away late. So my pick is going to be Marco Beltran. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a bantamweight contest between Eric Perez, who is 16-6, and Felipe Arantes, who is 18-7-1 with 2 no contests. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Perez, -215, the comeback in Arantes at +165. Right now it's Perez -185, Arantes is +160, so a lot of margins have tightened up, and there is two-way action on this fight as well. This is a tough one because I do think that, I mean, both these guys, especially bantamweight, definitely have some momentum. I think Arantes, even though he's got a couple wins recently under his belt, he still has been a little bit spotty. He hasn't looked that great in his performances. I know against, you know, against Sanders and Eves, he did look pretty good, but I'm still expecting a little bit more from him. And what the disappointing thing for me is Errantes. I mean, his cardio and conditioning at times, he does tend to slow up, but the guy is a pretty well-rounded fighter. I mean, he's got skill on the feet that you can't, just can't run over him on the feet. He also has some wrestling and some submissions to go along with it. So he's definitely a hard guy to sub as well. So he's got the well-rounded skill set. I just wish that he was a little bit more consistent and pushed the pace the entire three rounds in a fight. If so, I think he could obviously be even better. But Perez right now, I think for a while he was kind of suffering through some mental obstacles and some challenges mentally more than anything else. But he's really kind of got back in, and his win over obviously Francisco Rivera in his last fight was pretty impressive. The Lapolis win was not an easy one either. So he's coming off back-to-back wins, which I think is going to be really good for his mental game. It's going to bring him some confidence. And overall, I think Perez is the better fighter. I think he's a little bit more dangerous than Errantes on the feet. I think he has a little bit more wrestling as far as getting the fight to the floor and at least maintaining top position as well. He has a sub game to go along with it. So I think that the subs kind of neutralize each other out here in this spot. I think it's going to be Perez outstriking Errantes on the feet and maybe getting top position on the ground as well. And I think that if it hits the scorecards, we'll actually win him the fight. So Perez definitely has a slight edge over Errantes. It's just we don't know which Errantes is going to show up. I mean, if Errantes shows up in great shape, pushes a high pace, it's going to be a split decision, a crazy close fight, and it could go either way. But I think more so than not, I expect Perez to win like a 29-28 type of decision, winning two out of three rounds fairly clearly, and he should be the better fighter overall. So it's hard not to pick Perez here, but as far as the betting line goes at around 2-1 or so, it is kind of difficult because Errantes is no slouch to say the least. So good fight. I'm glad they matched it up this way, but I have to pick Perez. I think he keeps his momentum going, and Errantes, I think, will suffer his first loss in a couple fights.
Yeah, looking at the stylistic matchup, I just don't see a lot of paths to victory for Felipe Errantes here. Eric Perez is the better overall striker. Eric Perez is just as good with submissions, and Eric Perez is the better wrestler of the two. Errantes is does have a reach advantage, but that's it. They're the same height, same leg reach. Like, everything else is pretty much virtually identical. So, and Perez trains out of a better gym. So I really do like Eric Perez here. I think he showcased some really good things in that last bout against Francisco. And overall, I'm just really, really impressed with the improvements that Perez has made and the adjustments he can make. I mean, Taylor Lapolis is no joke. And Perez responded and was able to win that fight against him in the final two rounds. So, you know, Eric Perez is on a nice little roll here. And I think Felipe Errantes is basically just a stepping stone for him to get back into the top 15 in the bantamweight division. Errantes has looked good since dropping down to bantamweight, but you look at how he's won, and, you know, he dropped down, he faced Gerard Sanders, and that's a guy that just is very easily submitted, and he pulled off an armbar against him. Same thing with Yves Jabwe, a guy that has had a lot of issues with his overall ground game and got submitted. So I think there's no way that Felipe Errantes submits Eric Perez unless he clips him on the feet, hurts him, and takes advantage of him being staggered or something. And even then, I think it's unlikely. So overall, I think this is a really bad stylistic matchup for Errantes. I think Perez rolls here, either by decision or if he can find a stoppage somewhere along the way, I think he can get it too. So my pick is definitely going to be Eric Perez. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have Alexa Grasso, who is 8-0, taking on Heather Jo Clark, who is 7-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Grasso, -405, the comeback on Joe Clark at +285. And right now it's actually Grasso coming in at -500. The comeback on Joe Clark is at +400. So a little bit more action coming in Grasso's way. Another spot where really it's been two-way action overall. But Grasso now starting to get bet up, starting to get put in parlays as well. And she is the hyped fighter coming into this spot for sure. I mean, she's obviously been fighting in Invicta. She's been the one that's really out of Mexico that has been the star, the hopeful star for really a couple years now in the ladies division. So there's been a lot of people high on Grasso, and for a good reason. I mean, the girl is definitely a talented fighter, especially when it comes to the stand-up game. I mean, her technique is good. She's aggressive. She's accurate. She could do some damage as well. Just everything that you like to see about her. She has a decent takedown game overall, like as far as defense goes. She has a decent takedown defense. She's got a decent sub-awareness and ground game as well. So Grasso is definitely a complete fighter. She just needs to get tested a little bit more. So Heather Clark with the UFC matching Grasso up, it's not necessarily a gimme fight. I know the line actually might be a little bit higher than it should be because Clark is one of those fighters that just – kind of, even though she doesn't do anything too flashy or doesn't really make you think that, man, this girl could be really something special, she still is a tough out because, again, she's a little bit unorthodox. She pushes a high pace. She's aggressive. She is just a tough girl to deal with overall. And I think her biggest advantage in this fight over Grasso will be the ground game, and she will try to get this fight to the ground. And if she does so, it could get interesting. But overall, I think on the feet, I mean, Clark is going to be outclassed big time. I mean, Grasso probably has a takedown defense to keep it upright. That's why she's a significant favorite, and I think that's what's going to happen. So it's going to be tough for Grasso to finish Clark. I mean, she could maybe land enough along the way that it gets interesting as the fight goes, but I think what we're going to see here is a pretty clear-cut decision, maybe 30-27, 29-28, at the worst-case scenario for Grasso to get the win over Joe Clark. So it is going to be a successful UFC debut, I think, for Grasso, and there's a lot of high expectations for her, and I think that she could come through and become a star because she is going to get better and better as her career progresses. She's still, in my opinion, she's only 23 years old, and she's still improving. That's a scary thing. I mean, Grasso has a long way to go. She's going to be a lot better than she is now, but what she is now is definitely good enough to beat most at 115 pounds in the ladies division. So I think she is going to win this fight, and then we'll see where the hype goes from there. But right now, it's Grasso's fight to win or lose, so she's probably going to get the job done here.
Yeah, I really like Alexa Grasso. She's the type of fighter that has a lot of hype behind her. She's obviously very talented with her striking game. She also has the looks going for her. Very pretty young girl. So there is going to be just a rocket strapped to her back if she can go out there and take care of business here against Heather Jo Clark. Now, Heather Jo Clark, there's You can't underestimate her. I mean, her UFC debut, I think people were writing her off, and then she goes out there and beats Beck Rawlings with some takedowns, with some, some guard passes, with sub attempts, with some decent overall striking. So she's definitely not somebody that should be underestimated. I mean, you look at her last fight, which was the UFC debut of Carolina Kowalkiewicz, and that was a barn burner. Heather Jo Clark showcased a tremendous chin, insane durability in that fight because she ate 120 strikes in that fight. That is ridiculous over a 3-round period. And she landed 70 of her own. So, I mean, it's not like she was just out there to be a punching bag. I mean, she was in a fight. So Grasso definitely cannot go in there underestimating her opponent because Clark will definitely fight back. And if there is a path to victory for Clark, she probably definitely needs to use that wrestling, get some top control, just slow the fight down a little bit. Because overall, Clark just does not match up very well with Grasso in terms of the striking. Clark, she can push a high pace, but I don't think she can push as high a pace as Grasso, and Grasso can mix things up a little bit better. She has a very well-rounded striking game with her kicks and punches. She can really mix it up, and that's just not something that Clark is super comfortable with. So if this is a pure stand-up fight, Grasso wins hands down. If Clark can ugly this up a little bit, maybe get it to the fence, get her to the drag it to the floor, then there definitely is a path to victory for her. I mean, Grasso's still just 23 years old. She's a bit untested against top-tier talent. So Clark is going to be a good test for her. We're gonna learn a lot about Alexa Grasso in this fight. But overall, I'm expecting Grasso to come out here and take care of business against a tough veteran, but a beatable veteran. So my pick is going to be Alexa Grasso. Now, moving up to the lightweight division, we have Beneil Dariush, who is 13-2, taking on Rashid Magomedov, who is 19-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Magomedov, minus 170. The comeback on Darius at plus 130. And right now it's actually Magomedov minus 135 at five dimes, and the comeback on Darius is plus 115. There is some plus 125s out there on the Donbass screen. So almost basically where it opened, line margins have tightened up quite a bit as well. But as far as the comeback goes, from down at five dimes from plus 130, plus 115. So there is two-way action on this fight. And again, there's still plus 125s out there. So almost the same as the opening dog price here. So there will continue to be two-way action. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see Magomedov kind of creep up a little bit and then also drop with some heavy action coming in, probably sharp action coming in on Darius as the fight gets closer to post. So interesting spot. I mean, because we know how each fighter is going to win this fight. If Darius wins, it's because he gets Magomedov on the ground, and he definitely has a huge ground advantage over Magomedov for sure. I mean, that's what he's going to want to look to do here. I mean, even though Darius on the feet is no slouch, he's capable of striking with decent strikers as well. The advantage here is clear for him. He wants to get this fight to the ground. Magomedov is one of those special strikers. I mean, he really is. He's accurate. He's powerful. He can make you look foolish. I mean, look what he's been able to do and accomplish thus far in his UFC career. I mean, you look back, I think the blemish really early on was against Tony Martin, when Tony Martin did have some success early on in that fight. But outside of that, I mean, he's looked great. He was able to hang in there against Martin and ultimately get the win, of course. His wins recently, I mean, over Silverio, which you can say what you will about Silverio at this point, but his win over Burns was impressive as well. So the guy's able to fend off the ground game in most fights, and he's able to do what he does on the feet. So he is an elite striker, as I said. I mean, the guy's definitely one of those guys that you know is going to outstrike most opponents, especially in the lightweight division. So Darius is not going to want to play that game. So can Magomedov keep this fight upright and just outpoint Darius or even possibly knock him out? Or will Darius get this fight to the ground and submit him? I've been going back and forth on this fight because I really see a scenario that it could work out either way. But for me, I guess I'm going to have to lean a little bit towards Magomedov a little bit more. I think if Darius does not get it to the floor, he could be in some trouble. And Magomedov has shown that he has the ability to get back up, even if he is taken down relatively well. And obviously, he's got the toughness that kind of will fight off submission attempts as long as he can. And, you know, obviously the technical skill to get out of him as well. But he has that mentality that he won't, I think, at this point in his career, let himself get caught on the ground either. So he's got no quit in him. I think he's going to want to keep this fight standing. He's going to do a pretty good job doing so. And if he does, he probably wins the fight. So I'm going to slightly lean towards Magomedov. I mean, that could change again as we get closer to fight time. So make sure you look at our MMA Oddsbreaker staff picks to get my final decision. But as of right now, I'm leaning a little bit more against Magomedov. I think he's going to be able to basically sprawl brawl and probably win this fight on the feet against Darius. So that's going to be my pick.
Yeah, this fight is extremely interesting because both fighters have very different ways of pulling this one out. Darius is world-class on the ground, and he does have some power and decent ability on the feet, while Magomedov is world-class on the feet with a little bit of ground. So now, obviously, I think Darius is actually slightly more well-rounded than Magomedov because he has been able to win fights both standing and on the ground in the UFC. But there's a couple factors in this fight that are really starting to make me lean towards Magomedov. Number one is if you went back and watched Darius's fight against Michael Chiesa, he started off so strong against Chiesa, was dominating him in that fight in the first round, and then he gassed in the second round, slowed down, made a mistake, Chiesa took his back, choked him out. That was at regular elevation. That was a three-round fight, and he was practically done by the second round. So Darius's conditioning is a major, major issue. And I know that he did come out to Mexico City a little earlier to acclimate to the elevation, but still, for a guy that has had trouble with his conditioning just in regular elevation, for the fact that this fight is taking place upper elevation in Mexico City, it's terrifying for me. So honestly, if Darius does not put away Magomedov in the first round with a submission or a knockout, I don't know how he wins. I think Magomedov just takes over in the second and third rounds with really good striking output. Magomedov is the more accurate striker. He is the more active striker. He is better defensively in terms of strikes absorbed and percentage of strikes absorbed. So he has a lot of things going for him here. And Magomedov has pretty good takedown defense. I mean, 82%. So if he can avoid getting put on his back, then I think he's going to be in really, really good shape. And the harder Dariush has to work to get his game plan going, then I think the easier this fight is going to be for Magomedov, because that just will increase the time or reduce the amount of time that Dariush will be really effective in this fight. So honestly, if Dariush does not put away Magomedov in the first round, I see Magomedov winning a decision, maybe even a late stoppage like in his Elias Silverio fight. So I'm going to side with Rashid Magomedov here. I think that he's just primed to pull this one out. Now moving on to the lightweight division, we have the tough Latin America finale between Martin Bravo, who is 11-0, and Claudio Puelles, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Bravo, minus 175, the comeback on Puelles at plus 135. Public action, early action overall, some sharp action mixed in as well. Just everybody seemed to be coming in on Puelles, which I was a little surprised because it seemed like the popular opinion would be a little bit more so on Bravo. I mean, the undefeated fighter, a little bit more hype around him, more so than Puelles as well. But getting into the fight, it is going to be a close fight. So I get them gobbling up the plus money. I thought it was actually going to go up to Bravo maybe around 2-1 or so. So definitely the people that came in early did the research and didn't buy into the hype at all. So you got to respect that for sure. Now getting into the fight, I mean, both guys are really well-rounded. I mean, they really have a lot of similarities in this fight. That's why I'm expecting a war. Let's get into Bravo first. He really likes to stand and bang. I mean, he pushes forward. He's got solid wrestling to go along with the striking, sets things up well, transitioning really from his stand-up game to his takedowns. He does make some mistakes on the ground from time to time, though. I mean, he's still a little raw. Of course, he's, I believe, 23 years old. So he's going to make, you know, some mistakes. He's improving his game. And at times he does tend to get a little bit sloppy, especially as he's getting tired and the fight progresses a little bit. His takedown defense is okay. His ability to scramble back up once taken down is better, I think. And he trains at a decent gym, actually, in Mexico as well. So he's got decent, solid training partners to go along with it. So even though he's not from a big mainstream camp, he still has not, you know, what the typical maybe smaller fighter making his UFC debut or whatnot comes into play. He has some decent training partners that have actually made it over to the UFC as well. So Bravo is a work in progress, but the type of fighter that could definitely stick around. And after this fight, I think he drops down to 145 pounds. I think that's obviously a better fit for him. So he could win some fights, definitely keep winning some fights and get some momentum in the 145-pound division. Now, Puelles, on the other hand, you can say a lot of the same things about him as well. I mean, like I just said, he is well-rounded. He mixes things up well on the feet. He has, I think, a little bit cleaner technique than Bravo overall. He blends his kicks into his attack really well, and he does that often. And he's a little bit more patient, which, again, I mean, on the judges' scorecards, will that help or hurt him? I mean, usually they score for the more aggressive guy, but not the saying that Puelles is necessarily inactive at times. He's just a little bit more patient. He waits on his spot to attack, and he goes after it. And he is aggressive once he does find that. So I think Puelles, that's going to serve him well against Bravo as well, because I think even his defense is a little bit tighter. And then again, his technique is a little bit cleaner as well. So he's going to find, I think, more accurate spots to land on Bravo, and Bravo's, it's just going to get clipped a little bit more as the fight goes, but it will be competitive back and forth. And again, Puelles also has decent wrestling and takedown defense as well. And I think he's got a better submission game overall than Bravo does, but it is going to probably be pretty close there. Now, Puelles' camp overall, he's not coming from a big camp either. I mean, he's coming from Peru, but his coach was actually the coach that coached Barzola on his last fight. So, or on his victory in the Ultimate Fighter as well. So this camp already, even though it's smaller in Peru, I mean, they have an Ultimate Fighter winner. So they're looking for Puelles to be the second guy in a short time to actually get the title as well. I mean, so they, even though they're from a small camp, they know what they're doing there. And I think that they're going to be probably a little bit underrated, and they're definitely producing some people with potential. And I think, again, Puelles, like Bravo at 145 pounds, will make some noise and actually win some fights at in the featherweight division as well. But this fight, just to make sure you guys all know, it's for the tough Latin America 3 lightweight championship. So both fighters really should be fighting at 145 pounds, and I think we'll see them both drop. That being said, getting into this fight, I mean, I just basically spelled it out. I think it's going to be a competitive fight. I think it's got split decision written all over it. I mean, Bravo is going to be a little bit more aggressive. I think he's going to make this fight interesting, but Puelas' style, he's going to be a little bit cleaner. It really all depends on what the judges like. So I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Puelas myself. I think that, again, he's a little bit more technical. I think he's just a little bit better right now, but it is going to be a very coin flip type of fight and a very competitive fight. So not very confident in this pick, but I'm going to go with Puelas to win the fight.
And while I do think these guys are evenly matched, I just like Bravo a little bit more. The main reason is the fact that Bravo is a little bit more aggressive overall. Sometimes he can get a little reckless and wild, but I think that this fight is probably going the distance, and the more aggressive fighter is usually the one that sways the judges. Now, on the ground, Bravo has decent takedowns, usually ends up being single leg takedowns, but he shoots in aggressively. And Puelas has, a lucha libre background. So, basically a South American wrestling style. So I think these guys are going to be pretty evenly matched on the ground. I don't see either guy having a dominant advantage one way or the other. And on the feet, I think, Bravo being the more active and aggressive fighter should help him out. The biggest advantage that Puelas has is the fact that he is, a little bit bigger. I mean, Bravo could potentially drop a weight class for sure. And, Puelas, well, actually both of these guys can be fighting at 145, and Bravo potential could drop all the way down to 135. So, I think Puelas is going to have a little bit of a size advantage. Maybe he can bully Bravo a little bit, but overall, I think that the fact that Bravo is going to be more aggressive on the feet is going to make up for Puelas' size advantage, and it's going to be a little difficult to use that reach and size when somebody is, you know, in your grill a little bit. So overall, I think this fight should be a lot of fun. It should be close, but I'm slightly leaning Bravo to pull out the decision just with that aggression. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Ricardo Lamas, who is 16-5, taking on Charles Oliveira, who is 21-6 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Lamas, -125, the comeback on Oliveira, -115, and right now looking over five dimes. It is currently Lamas as the dog. Oliveira is -115. Lamas is -105. So it did flip at five dimes. Now, again, across the down best screen, it looks like most sports books have it about a pick'em fight. There are some places that have 115, 120 as well for Oliveira. So pick'em type of fight with, it looks like most of the early action is in general coming in Oliveira's way. Tough one, man. I mean, Oliveira definitely has the skill set to win this fight. I mean, I think the guy is a very talented, has nothing but potential as far as the featherweight division goes. I mean, just his style overall, he's one of the best grapplers in the sport today. I mean, offensively, the guy is so slick with his submission skill that he can really, if he gets on top on the ground, you know, against most people, obviously he's proven it before against people that he shouldn't submit, like Kaioki for one example. I mean, he gets the job done. So Oliveira is a special finisher when it comes to the ground. Now on the feet, he's not too bad. I mean, he is definitely getting better. He's got a little bit of length to go along with it. He tries to stay aggressive and mix things up, but he does have a little bit of quit in him. He doesn't like to get hit. Once he does get hit at times, he doesn't react very well. Now, that being said, he's starting to get a little bit better. So he's just a little bit inconsistent for my liking. I mean, Oliveira is one of those guys, again, we've seen the quit in him in the past, and it's always bothered me because you start to back this guy and you think, okay, he's kind of turned the corner a little bit, and then he lets you down again. So I don't like seeing that in Oliveira. I think that he's better than that. And I mean, obviously, in his last performance against Pettis, it wasn't bad. I mean, he ended up getting beat and gotten caught by submission. He underestimated Pettis' guillotine choke, obviously, in that spot. But overall, I think Oliveira is definitely one of the best fighters at 145 pounds. And he's not an easy out for anybody in the weight class, including Lamas. Now, Lamas, you do get a little bit more stability when it comes to Llamas. You know what to expect. Now, there is a question mark and a concern with his chin a little bit, more so than anything else with Llamas, because he has been knocked out three times in his career. But if you look at his fights with Aldo, if you look at his fights with Holloway, I mean, he fought some heavy hitters and his chin survived okay, and he's actually performed relatively well in some of those spots. So Llamas is definitely one of the best fighters at 145 pounds as well. He is the better overall fighter. I think he's just more complete in every aspect of the game, and he's, again, a little bit more consistent. So you'd like to see that consistency in a fighter like that. Llamas obviously was training for a fight already. He's going to be in shape. He's going to be ready to go. Oliveira is taking this fight on short notice. So I'm swayed a little bit more towards Llamas in this spot, but again, it's not a scenario that I'm very confident with, because Llamas has been put on his back before, and Oliveira is the type of fighter that can get the fight to the floor. So even though Llamas has decent takedown defense, Oliveira's the way he goes about his takedowns at times, I mean, it's just – it's good, and it's a little bit unorthodox at times as well, and he gets the fight to the ground more times than not. Now, I mean, some people have stuffed his takedowns, obviously, and have had success against him. So Llamas is going to need to do that, I think, more so than not, or end up in top position on the ground as well, drop some ground and pound, and try to make life miserable for Oliveira. But Oliveira, even off of his back, is pretty dangerous. So Llamas has to be cautious. He's going to be fighting off submissions. He's going to be fighting off some length on the feet. Even Oliveira's clinch game is actually pretty effective with his knees. So there's a lot to like about Oliveira, but I would normally pick him in this spot. I don't like the inconsistency, and I don't like the fact that he is coming in on short notice. Let's see if he even makes weight, first of all, and we'll go from there. So this is another fight that I could change my mind by fight day. I could flip over to Oliveira. So again, check MMA Oddsbreaker or Stat Picks for this, for the final decision. But right now, I got to lean a little bit more towards the steady Llamas. I think that Llamas is just a little bit more consistent, and I trust him just a little bit more in this spot. So that's basically it right now. That's why I'm leaning his way. But I could easily see Oliveira get the job done here. Wouldn't be surprised at all. But my official pick will be Llamas.
And I have to come in that same way as well. The main factor is what Nick brought up. Charles Oliveira taking this fight on super short notice. Llamas was initially planning on fighting BJ Penn. Penn got hurt. That event got completely canceled. Llamas is still ready to go. I mean, he is in great shape. He just had an extra week or so added to his fight camp. So I'm not too worried about Llamas at all. Charles Oliveira, on the other hand, this is a guy, as Nick mentioned, has had trouble making weight. He has had a little bit of conditioning issues in the past. He is a guy that you can't quite trust with his heart sometimes. He just gives up, like in the Max Holloway fight. So it's just really difficult to trust Charles Oliveira here. I know that his ground game is incredible, and he is capable of beating a lot of really talented fighters. But Ricardo Llamas is probably one of the better fighters he's faced in a while, other than, you know, like Anthony Pettis. And granted, the Pettis-Oliveira fight was close, but there were moments in that fight where, you know, the quitting Oliveira started to show up. Pettis landed a good body kick. Oliveira folded. So I do think if Llamas plays it smart, lands some heavy kicks, then he'll be in good shape. If Oliveira goes and pulls guard, Llamas has some of the best ground and pound in the featherweight division. So I'm not terribly worried about that. Llamas hasn't, I believe, been submitted by anybody. So I'm not really worried about the ground game. I mean, yeah, Charles Oliveira can submit a lot of people, but I think Llamas can dish out a lot of punishment while Oliveira is looking to crank on something. So he's going to be playing with fire consistently in this fight. And I think Llamas, being as experienced as he is, having taken his game to the next level a little bit with where his kicks do a lot of damage now, as you saw in the Diego Sanchez fight, I think Llamas is actually at a really good spot in his career. And this is a good opportunity for him to go out there and really do some damage. I don't expect Charles Oliveira's conditioning to hold up in this fight. And unless Oliveira pulls off a first round submission, then I don't think he can win. So I'm going to side with Ricardo Llamas as well. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Diego Sanchez, who is 28-9, taking on Marcin Held, the UFC newcomer, who is 22-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Held -215, the comeback on Sanchez at +165. Right now, it's actually Held -275, the comeback on Sanchez +235. So It was staying a little bit lower early on. I mean, this line has been out for a little while now, and now as we get closer to fight time, a little bit more support coming in on held. And I think we're going to continue to see some parlay action or whatnot in that way as well. Obviously, held making his UFC debut. I'm excited, man. The guy deserves to be in the UFC roster. I mean, if you look at it, he's still only 24 years old, and the amount of quality opponents that he's faced throughout Bellator, even before Bellator in the European scene, has been pretty decent. I mean, he's been tested throughout his career time and time again, and he's the type of person that has gotten better with age and the more experience he gets. So obviously, he's known for his submissions on the ground. I mean, phenomenal with his leg locks and you know, those type of submissions. And of course, he can mix it up and do more than just that, but his wrestling is getting better. He's actually able to control and get top position now on the ground as well. He doesn't necessarily have to just finish you by submission to win the fights. So his stand-up is also getting better. Just overall, he's improving his game. And again, he's getting tested and he's passing those tests. I think he just continues to get better and better. Now, Sanchez, we all know what Diego's been throughout his UFC career. He's been a warrior. I mean, you got to respect Diego Sanchez. He brings it. He comes to fight every time. He's a tough out against most opponents as well. He's been in the sport for so long now. I mean, he's had so many great battles throughout his career that, again, you got to show him nothing but respect. But that being said, I mean, he is not the same Diego Sanchez he once was in his peak. So I think what the setup is here is obviously the UFC feeding Marcin Held a big name in Diego Sanchez to get his, you know, first win and be a great one for his UFC career for Held. So get a notch like Diego Sanchez on your belt. Not a bad start off to UFC career. Now, that being said, it's not going to be easy. I mean, if this fight goes to the scorecards, it might be interesting because Sanchez is definitely going to be the one pushing a high pace on the feet. You know what? Right now, I wouldn't even say he's got an advantage over Held. I think Held's closed the gap enough that I think actually Held can outstrike Sanchez, and I think Held on the feet might actually be able to knock Sanchez out. Again, tough to say that because Sanchez hasn't been an easy guy to knock out throughout his whole career, but obviously Lozon started off something that I think will continue. I mean, Lozon was able to knock him out. I think Held, even though he doesn't have the striking Lozon does, I think Held is getting a little bit more confident. He's getting a little bit better, and Sanchez's chin is not going to get any better. It's only going to get worse. So wouldn't be surprised to see Held ended on the feet. Wouldn't be surprised to see Held. He's that type of special grappler as well, that if anybody can submit Diego Sanchez, it's a guy like Held. I mean, he's just – his ability to scramble and just put you in bad spots on the ground for Held is really ridiculous. So I don't think – he subbed Sanchez because Sanchez is obviously his BJJ is great. His sub defense, I mean, throughout his whole career has been great as well. But I wouldn't be shocked if anybody can do it. It's a guy like Held. So Held, I think, has the outside shot of getting the submission. Held has an outside shot of actually knocking Diego out. And I think he has actually the shot of getting top position in this fight as well on the ground and just kind of riding out a decision as the fight progresses. So Held, it's his fight to win or lose. I do think he's going to get the W here over Sanchez. But again, if the rest of it shows up and is tough and he is still looking like he has something left, and it might be a little bit more competitive than I'm saying. But for me, it's Held as a pick. I think he does make a successful UFC debut against a veteran like Sanchez.
Yeah, this is a potential trap fight. Now, obviously, just about everyone and their mother is expecting Marcin Held to have a tremendous UFC debut. He is a really talented fighter, great submission games. His heel hooks are pretty much the second best in all of MMA next to Husamar Palhares. I mean, the guy is extremely, extremely talented, and he's still young and still improving drastically. So he has a ton of potential, and he has a lot of advantages over Diego Sanchez. That being said, Diego Sanchez is somebody that you can't sleep on because he has a penchant for going out there and winning fights that he probably shouldn't win, because he is so aggressive and wild and crazy on the feet. And he is aggressive with his takedown attempts. He's just always pushing the pace, and that does tend to sway judges. So that is something that Marcin Held is going to have to be really careful about, because if he can't get takedowns, if he can't put Diego Sanchez on his back, then he's going to be forced into a stand-up fight where, even though he might be technically superior to Diego Sanchez, Sanchez is probably going to be pushing a higher pace. And you just never know what judges are going to be thinking. So I do like Marcin Held here. I think that the sky's the limit with this kid, and there's a very realistic possibility that he becomes the first man to ever submit Diego Sanchez. – but I would be very careful with this line. I think it's gone out of control. And while Sanchez, or while Held is really good, there is always the possibility that Sanchez can play spoiler. And this is a potential spoiler-ish type of fight. So I'm picking Marcin Held, but I am definitely exercising caution here. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening, we have former lightweight champion Rafael Dos Anjos, who is 25-8, taking on Tony Ferguson, who is 22-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open this fight a pick exactly, minus 120 either way. So minus 120 Dos Anjos, minus 120 Ferguson. I know that could be a surprise for most, especially since Dos Anjos was recently the UFC lightweight champion. Obviously suffered a loss to Eddie Alvarez and lost a strap. But outside of that, I mean, Dos Anjos has been a beast. He's looked great. But I do think this is a pick 'em type of fight. And early action did come into Dos Anjos. Now, this line has been out a while. I mean, it did creep up a little bit. Now we're seeing, as we get closer to fight time, action coming back in Ferguson's way as well. This is going to be a great fight. I mean, another true toss-up fight, in my opinion. I mean, like I said, Dos Anjos definitely deserves some recognition. I think he is the better overall fighter. I mean, he's a little bit more technical. His stand-up game, he's proven time and time again now as of late that he can be more than just dangerous on the feet. I mean, the guy has technical skill. He's got power to go along with it. He's got killer instinct. Obviously, he's got underrated wrestling. He's able to take the fight to the floor. He's got good jiu-jitsu to go along with it. I mean, everything you want to see. That's why he wore the strap. I mean, the guy's a very complete fighter, underrated fighter throughout his UFC career, and deserves to be in the spotlight. I think deserved to wear that strap as well. So a lot of good things to say about Dos Anjos. Now, of course, he suffered that leg injury, pulled out of the McGregor fight, and then after that, you know, ended up fighting Eddie Alvarez and losing his strap recently as well. So I don't know. This just, it's, in my opinion, there's some – the surroundings around Dos Anjos right now, it's just not a very good comfort for me as far as what you want to see in a guy ready to win a tough fight and what he's going to have against Ferguson. So a lot of question marks. I know it's not fair to say that Dos Anjos could be suffering a decline, especially after one loss, like, you know, and he was actually looking okay before he got caught against Alvarez. But that being said, you know, I mean, he's had a lot of wars throughout his career, UFC career, not that Ferguson has not, but we could see kind of the scenario, in my opinion, where you see these guys, once they reach that strap and they get the goal and then they lose it, they suffer a few unexpected losses along the way after that. And then they just kind of get back in the mix as far as just being a more of an upper tier fighter, but not a championship level fighter. So my sneaky suspicion is I think we're going to see Dos Anjos actually not look as good as he normally does. And if that's the case, he can't afford to do that against a guy like Ferguson. I mean, Ferguson has been a beast as well. Let's not forget. I mean, all his fights as of late, he's been running through people. I mean, minus his last fight, that was the crazy thing. And that's what you got to kind of stick in the back of your mind as well. And I do. I think his fight against actually Venata in his last fight, I mean, that was surprising because, well, first of all, Venata obviously is a little bit underrated. The guy's better than most everyone thought, but still hurting Ferguson like he did and almost winning that fight. And now Ferguson going up against the former champ, you wouldn't think it's a good scenario for him. But I do think matchups are obviously different. I think Dos Anjos doesn't move and he isn't as unorthodox as Venata was in that fight as well. So I think that even though Dos Anjos has a ton of power and has the skill set to make Ferguson miserable on the feet, I still don't think he's going to have as much success as Venata did against Ferguson. So I think Ferguson's going to bounce back here, have a better performance, even though we can't take it away from Ferguson. He still won that fight. He just still did look pretty bad in that fight. We got to all admit that. But that being said, Dos Anjos is a different beast, a different opponent for him, and I think he is going to perform a little bit better. Before that Venata fight, though, I mean, look what he was able to accomplish. I mean, he was able to beat Barboza in the second round. He ended up subbing Barboza there in that fight. He ran through Josh Thompson. Tibau, that domination over Tibau, nobody has really done that. So Ferguson had a lot of momentum going in to this spot as well before that Venata fight. So I think that Ferguson has been a beast. He's got the confidence, even though he suffered that a little bit of a setback, even though he won that fight against Venata. I still think that it's not going to bother him mentally as much. I think he's going to come in his fight aggressive. He does get a bit wild and he could get caught with some punches, but Ferguson's a tough cat. He's hard to finish. He's hard to get rid of. Even if you do rock him and knock him almost out, the guy survives it and then comes back and wins a fight. So I don't think that Ferguson's going to get beat by Dos Anjos on the feet. And I think he's going to be the more dangerous finisher of the two, as it goes, especially. I know Dos Anjos, at one time at least, he had some cardio issues. It seems like that's been addressed and he's getting better because he has been five rounds now, obviously. And I mean, his cardio is definitely significantly improved. But Ferguson's a cardio machine as well. I don't think it's going to be a big issue for Ferguson to kind of push the pace. So even if Ferguson loses the first couple rounds to Dos Anjos, I think as it goes, even though Dos Anjos' cardio has improved, Ferguson's still going to be the aggressor in this fight. So if this fight hits a scorecard, which is going to be tough, a big if, because both these guys are finishers and have the ability to finish each other. If it hits a scorecard, I think Ferguson's going to win because he's going to be the aggressor. Now he's going to have to be careful and stay off his back because Dos Anjos is going to probably want to get some takedowns. But again, along the way, I think it's going to get more difficult for Dos Anjos and Ferguson's going to have some success. So with all of it being said, I think Ferguson is the more dangerous fighter, even though he's not the more technical fighter on the feet. I think Ferguson is going to be the aggressor in this spot overall in this fight. So it's hard not for me to pick him. I'm going to lean his way and kind of go, I think, against the grain, because most people are going to probably end up picking Dos Anjos in this spot. And I understand it. I respect it. And everybody else could be right. But I do believe that Ferguson is just right now in a good spot. I think he's going to probably be able to have some success against Dos Anjos, probably more than we all think. And he's probably going to get the W. So I'm going to pick Ferguson to pull off the slight upset here.
Looking at this fight, I'm just not quite seeing it the same way Nick is. There is one advantage that Tony Ferguson has in this fight, and it's the fact that he has a 6-inch reach edge. Everything else, I like Dos Anjos. Technique, power, even chin. Dos Anjos is coming off of a TKO loss to Eddie Alvarez, but I mean, Tony Ferguson has been on the receiving end of some monster shots in his last couple fights. And I mean, Landon Vanetta, that's terrifying. If you're really looking at it, because that's a fight. I know the guy was good. He was a good prospect, but that's UFC debut against a guy that's potentially fighting for the title. And Ferguson got slaughtered in the first round. So, I mean, if Vanetta can do it, why can't Rafael Dos Anjos do it? And even worse, Dos Anjos has way better killer instinct and ability to really just push the pace. I mean, look what he did to Donald Cerrone, a guy that is way, way more talented of a striker than Tony Ferguson. Dos Anjos just nailed him to the body, just pressed the action, and then forced a ref stoppage. Now, I know Eddie Alvarez stopped Dos Anjos in his last fight, but you know what? Alvarez probably would have stopped Ferguson too. So I really think people are looking way too much into the fact that Dos Anjos is coming off of a loss. The only thing that scares me at all about Dos Anjos right now is the fact that he's branching out from King's MMA. He spent the first half of his training camp with King's MMA, and then he spent the last half in Mexico, and then he announced something a couple days ago about he's going to be starting up his own gym soon. So that is a little scary, definitely, because Rafael Cordero has really harnessed Dos Anjos and turned him into a world beater. And if he's not around, you know, you've definitely have seen fighters plateau and then even start to fall back if they get separated from the coaches that really brought him to where they were. That being said, I think Dos Anjos definitely has the skills right now and the training right now to beat Tony Ferguson. Ferguson, while he does have power and length on the feet, Nick mentioned it. He is wild. He can be reckless. His defense is not that good. Honestly, I think Dos Anjos's striking accuracy is excellent. And Dos Anjos being a southpaw with a lot of power in that left hand, a lot of power with his kicks, I think he can do some serious damage. Another thing that I think people are really underestimating here is the fact that Ferguson can get really cute with his ground game, doing those little ninja rolls to avoid getting taken down. He goes for darce chokes like crazy. Sometimes he's willing to give up position repeatedly, like in the Danny Castillo fight, a fight he probably should have lost, because he was just so aggressively going for submissions and dropping to his back. I think Dos Anjos can take advantage of that. I mean, you saw it. Dos Anjos pressured Anthony Pettis to win the title and then repeatedly took him down too. So I can see Dos Anjos getting top position against Ferguson and Ferguson getting in a lot of trouble there. That is a huge potential edge for Dos Anjos. Dos Anjos' ground game is elite, one of the best in the lightweight division. And while Ferguson definitely has a lot of unorthodox tricks with his ground game, I don't see him squirming his way free like he's been able to do against guys like Josh Thompson, among others. So I think unless Ferguson catches Dos Anjos with a big right hand or something just big and straight as Dos Anjos is on the way in, I think Dos Anjos not only wins, but can potentially win this fight convincingly with a stoppage. So I just think Tony Ferguson, while he's been on a tremendous roll and has picked up some really, really impressive victories, I think that this might be a little bit too much for him and he could get himself in some serious, serious trouble. So my pick's going to be Rafael Dos Anjos to get the victory. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 98. Now our premium bets will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.